Hello, I'm Douglas Kretz, and we're back with the BizSpark Show. This is Microsoft's weekly program talking to the hottest startups, the newest bootstrap startups around the world. And we talk about the cool things they're doing with Microsoft technology or even all the other stuff that's out there. So today we're very privileged to have the winner of Startup World, the CEO of Really Active, Jeffrey Dungan. I always want to call your last name Dungeon. I think it sounds so much more macabre. But you have created a company with your team called Really Active. Why don't you tell us what it is in as short as possible? Give us your 30-second elevator pitch.
Okay, so Really Active is pretty much impossible to do in about 30 seconds. But think of the Internet of Things. And if you don't know what the Internet of Things is, it's really about technology being able to understand us, understand the physical world so that it can really blend seamlessly in the background so we don't have to do anything. So the example I like to give is you get into a car, you press the button, it starts, knows it's you, it gives you the everything there without you having to tell it anything. It's just a tool that takes you somewhere, and it can do that because it knows it's you.
So the way I think about it is, and the way you've told me, is that it's kind of an improvement on basic RFID. You call this stuff active RFID. You have a bunch of sensors that I think you call reels, right? And they have a battery in them. And that active, that's constantly active, and it does a one-minute search of the area around it to see if you're home, basically, see if you are around or your device is around. And then take it from there. What does it then do in as layman as you can do it? What is it then doing with the cloud in order to help you have a better life with technology, essentially?
So really easy way to explain it is at some point in your life, you put a Wi-Fi router in your home. And you put that Wi-Fi router in your home because you had some device that needed to connect to Wi-Fi. So us, it's similar. It's instead of putting a Wi-Fi router in your home, you're putting these devices, these things called reels, that are just sensors that listen for wireless devices. And we make some wireless devices. They look like this guy here. But there's a whole bunch of things coming out that you might have seen. The Tile app, Bluetooth low energy beacons and tags, all kinds of things that are wireless. And we can pick those up and identify them. And that's really all it is. It's just identifying the presence of devices in your home, in your office, at a conference, wherever that might be. And our reels just shoot that information up to the cloud. And there you have an API which can help you trigger really cool things based on the presence of people, places, or things.
Got it. And I think we'll get to your API in a second. But you guys won Startup World recently. I guess it was not very long ago. That's the organization run by Hermione Way and her cadre of people. Why did they like your solution, and why would they go for this Internet of Things solution that you had picked out? What was the sense that you got from that competition?
So Startup World was really about looking for cities around the world that were producing interesting startups, looking for startup ecosystems outside of Silicon Valley that were able to produce interesting technology, and looking at the challenges that they faced and everything. Most of the startups that were there had some element of what I'd call heart, or something that was progressive, or they're doing something sort of new or interesting for the world. We kind of came in as a little bit of an outsider. Internet of Things is very new. It's a little bit difficult to explain sometimes what you're doing, but it has the potential to really, really change the world in a big way. Right. What the judges liked about what we did is we were pushing very much the need for an open Internet of Things. We've taken an alternative approach to how we moved our technology forward and how we marketed it and everything. And at the same time, they thought we had a really big market, a good business model, pitched it very well. And and then it was a really big, and we were actually scalable. So,
and you have a small team, yeah?
We're a very small team. We're at co-founders right now, and we've had a few employees help us out over our course.
Right. And I forgot to say, you guys are based in Montreal. Did you get your start in Montreal, or have you moved there since you started?
No, I'm originally from Montreal. I was working in the Bay Area, actually, before I started Really Active. And the reason I came back to Montreal was because it's very, very inexpensive to start a startup. You can do a lot on a very, very, very small budget. You can bootstrap easily. It's good talent here, good food. It's a nice, it's a nice place to live.
You're going to force me to mention poutine, I think. You're going to make me say, I've never actually had it, but I know that this is part of the... let's get back to the alternative. You said that you guys had an alternative way of marketing yourself. You also had, you know, we've talked earlier, you've had made some decisions that maybe some people might have been surprised at. For one, and I think this is probably the most interesting, is that you decided to open source or make available a portion of the code that you've used to create this company. Why would you do something like that? And were you afraid that maybe, or did you ever worry about that maybe people could then take what you're doing and then one-up you and then kind of defeat the whole purpose of having a startup?
Not really, no. One of the interesting things is that there are a lot of people in the Internet of Things that are actually building open source software. There's a whole bunch of platforms that exist, and they're all kind of competitive with one another. And we really didn't want to contribute to just making some other siloed platform. So we just took a look at what unique aspect we contributed to the Internet of Things, and as small as possible, that little nugget, we said, okay, well, we're going to open source that so that people can understand, they can start building on top of us, and at the same time, we know our technology better than anyone else, and taking it further, that's something we've reserved for ourselves that we can open later or that we can keep proprietary if it makes sense.
Right, and so what was the actual thing that you open sourced?
So for us, we're actually releasing this month on, we'll be hosting it on GitHub, our package that talks with our hardware, so you can run everything that we're doing locally on a local deployment, or you can run on your own cloud server so that you can really just do whatever you need. So it just grabs the identity, location, timestamp of everything that's present and serves up snapshots of context, essentially.
You mentioned that there were a whole bunch of companies who were also competitive in this space who were also making open some of their code or what they're trying to do. Is there a particular advantage to doing that if you are working in this kind of space, hardware market, and keeping yourself from being completely siloed? I mean, is there something that when you look at other industries makes that particularly effective in what you're doing? Or is it just the nature of the market, the nature of the players that you're competing against?
Well, in the Internet of Things, the fear that most people doing what we're doing have is that the big players of the world, like the Ciscos and the GEs that are really pushing themselves forward as champions of the Internet of Things, and then they have a real model behind that. For us, we want to make it that there are open standards, that there are, like the Internet itself, where there are things we just all agree on that make it as pervasive as possible. And that's one of the reasons why people are going the open source route initially. And from the standpoint of if someone takes our code and makes some awesome stuff with it later, well, that's great for us because it's something that we can probably use and leverage as well and add our unique flavor to it. So,
what's the advantage of having standards, though? I mean, I know that standards are talked about all the time in every code community and every sort of software community, but in this sort of, you know, I keep imagining that this is really the wearable space, this is really the home, but it's also the business space where anything that you have on you will be able to read, understand, and enable for you an easier way of doing things. Why are standards very particular for this industry? Why is that important to lead with those first rather than to start really, really worrying about, you know, a glitzy marketing campaign or convincing everybody to buy what you're doing?
Well, the best example that I can give is if you really think of the Internet and how we got the Internet and what we love about the Internet was a science project and has got a very interesting history. There were competing Internets, and if you really go into it, the Computer History Museum in Mountain View is great for looking at that. But it's this kind of nice accident that happened that gave us a bunch of standards that everyone just agreed on, and then we were able to build really fast a whole bunch of awesome stuff on top of that. With the Internet of Things, you can go the route of progressively moving forward some closed ecosystems, or what people would call like the CompuServe of things and the AOL of things. But at the end of the day, what you really want is something that's big, open, that everyone can agree on, that we can then generate something much, much, much larger based on that platform.
Got it.
And that's why it's interesting to have the standards now and move forward with them.
And before we go deeper in this, I'm just getting word from our studio that the microphone is hitting your awesome goatee, and so it's creating a little fizzy thing, like a fizzy sound. So if you can move it a little bit, I mean, I don't want to distract everyone with the goatee, but it is awesome. It's just that the microphone was picking it up. So where do you think this industry is going, and why would maybe people follow your lead and get into this space and start working in an open source environment, but also in this wearable, aware computing, let's say? Is it going to be the next step in which a lot of this business is done, like any kind of business is done, or is it just something that's going to remain niche, like, you know, fitness apps, or just, you know, Xbox, turning on the Xbox when you use your voice to recognize that you're in the room? Give us a walkthrough about where your vision is about where this kind of industry is going.
I guess the best way to say it is that this is really the future. I mean, us as humans, we've got to a limit sort of in the physical world that we live in of what we can do. And the online world has almost surpassed what's happening in the physical world. So you'll have people devote most of their time almost living online because it's a way cooler place to live and because you can do a lot more. So the future is really about the online world being able to reconnect with what's happening in the real world that we have to live and breathe in. And at that point, when you merge up both of those worlds, it creates just so much awesome that that's really the next big thing. It's hard to visualize it exactly, but when you have wearable technology, when you can uniquely identify people, when you can link up your presence with your online persona, there's so much that can be done, and just a few little elements that are missing. And one of the biggest blockers, ironically, is people who are reluctant to take that next step forward in technology.
Yeah, and you think we are heading in that direction, that, you know, to quote a nemesis, Steve Jobs, basically, you know from the, who had said that there are going to be different uses for computers and different types of things. There'll be trucks, there'll be cars, and, you know, let's throw some others in there. There'll be motorcycles and scooters and skateboards and stuff. Do you think we're moving into an area where we're not always going to have to sit down next to a laptop and look through a browser, but most of the stuff that we're trying to do is just going to be more immediately available to us, just like the click of a snap of your finger or a voice command or just the fact that you're in a place? That's basically what you're saying to me.
Right. Well, we made the joke when we were in Accelerator last year that why are we living in the world through a 4-inch portal, right? And that's exactly it. There's technology, once it understands us, I mean, at that point, you don't have to use your phone to do everything. The things that you can do normally with a normal interface, or better than that, no interface whatsoever, make a lot more sense.
Got it. So let's then talk about, you chose to work with the Microsoft team. You were initially on AWS and you've moved some stuff over to Azure. Was part of that movement because of realizing your vision and trying to make things more immediately available? I know that when you were pitching your stuff to the Startup World Conference, you talked about how scalable you were and how easy it was for you to get from one place to another very quickly. Do you want to kind of walk through that for some of the people who are listening now, you know, who are also building on Azure? Why did you sort of technically and also from a business sense want to work with Microsoft to get that kind of stuff done?
There are a million decisions of when you're choosing cloud hosting or do it yourself and everything. So there's no perfect way ever, and it's really with the special constraints that you have, the time, how your business might scale and everything, you have to look at all of those factors. I would say the first one is definitely economics. You have to make sure that whatever option you go with, that if you start to scale, that you can still afford to do whatever solution you have, that it still makes sense. Mm-hmm. And for us, in the beginning, we just did AWS because that's what everybody does, threw something up quick just to learn. When we were in Accelerator, we were approached by Microsoft, presented the BizSpark program, which is a really great program. And for that reason, plus the reason that Azure had certain features like platform as a service or things that allowed us to kind of click a slider for scaling, that could allow us to keep a much smaller team, have an easier way of managing our online portion of our business. And those were ultimately really big constraints. Plus, you're doing some cool stuff, like we're on Node.js and doing some slightly newer technologies, and we were really impressed that Microsoft jumped onto those really quickly and that they were available on Azure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been incredible leaps since the arrival of the Windows Azure offer over the past couple of years, and it's really started to get faster in terms of their cycle of development and testing and getting things out there. You know, one of the things I know about building a startup, you know, and one of the things that's cool is that nowadays, because it costs so little to start one, and because you have things like this, like you're talking about, the scalable option where it's like, we need to go to this very quickly, you don't need to hire and go through a whole bunch of HR exercises to get the team that you want. You can kind of keep working with a small team. Can you talk about what are the advantages of keeping that team small, like from a business founder's point of view? What advantages do you have when you don't have to scale up to 18, 20, 30 people?
For sure. So one of the nice things of when you're a startup, you're small, you're just co-founders. Hopefully you found some co-founders that really get along well, share a vision, and you just want to execute. And often that's kind of the happy time in a startup, where if you have a little bit of money and a little bit of stuff, you're having fun in a sandbox with people that you love to work with. The greatest challenge I find in startups is scaling anything. And one of those things is definitely the team. The real core inside your business is your team. And when you start having to bring on other people that may be specialists for cloud, this and that, they may fit from a technical perspective, but at the same time, fitting from everything else that matters in a team can be very difficult. Sometimes it can be difficult to find those people. And it really then often distracts you from the vision. You get kind of rat-holed into all the things that you start patching, and you really start to slow down.
Right.
So the moment that you can take a platform that's scalable, allows you to stay as small and core as possible, and offer as many things as possible as a service, yes, your business intuition might say, hey, am I not paying more for having something as a service? But if you really take a look at what is the cost, both in pain and sweat and in dollars for scaling your team or to find the right specialist to handle something for you, I think the as-a-service model really works well for the startup community, and especially given how fast technology is moving and how hard it is to find the right person at the right time, it can be a total godsend.
Yeah. So let's break for a second, just remind people that we're watching the BizSpark show. I'm Douglas Kretz, and we're talking to Jeff Dungan, who's the CEO of Really Active. Really Active is basically just trying to connect the Internet of Things and bring it to the cloud. Do you find, Jeff, is it hard to explain to people what it is that Really Active really does? And what do you do to get around that? And what advice would you give to people who might be struggling with that really crucial part of the business, which is making sure people know exactly what it is you do?
It happens all the time. The really great thing is if we pitch an example in a 30-second pitch, people will get it. There's no problem. If we focus on a single vertical, a single example, it's great. And if we try to do the bigger vision, it's really difficult. It's trying to like explain what is the singularity, right?
Yeah, that's going to cause people to get panicked, I think, actually. Like, wait, what's going to happen?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. So you don't want to go through all that. But I mean, for instance, we did a pitch contest which was more focused on retail. So there's a store that you might know, Canadian Tire, came in, we pitched them. And in 3 minutes, we were able to just get across the point in examples, and it worked very well.
Yeah.
So my advice to people who are doing a platform is, number one, doing a platform play is really tough. Make sure that you try to stay as true to your platform as you can and as generic as possible, obviously. But when you're pitching or getting initial clients, just make sure you speak their language. Make sure that you're giving them something that they understand. We've fought that battle for almost 2 years now. So,
yeah. Well, I imagine what's difficult about selling a platform? Because platforms are just really hard to get your head around anyway, because by their nature, they're just big, right? They're meant to do a lot of things. So what are some of the roadblocks that you hear when you approach clients, and then how do you get around some of those roadblocks?
The number one thing that we do is if someone comes with an inbound and says, hey, what are you doing? Or I like what you're doing, tell me more. The most important thing is to find out what's their background, what's their need, what are they doing, what are they looking for? And once you've listened for a while and you understand that, then it's a lot easier to pitch to them in what they want to hear, what they need to hear, and what will actually make them able to make some kind of a decision on whether technology is a good fit for them or not. So there's a danger in just going straight out bold and just pitching. I think the startups that have a lot of success reaching a very diverse audience are the ones that can get a feel for who they're pitching to, and then deliver.
Got it. So let's also talk about your experience, because part of what you guys were working on was cultivated in an accelerator. What is the name of the accelerator where you guys have been based for a while?
So we passed through the Founder Fuel Accelerator in Montreal, and we were part of their third cohort.
Okay. And the work you were doing there, that's when you started working with Microsoft?
Exactly.
Right. Let's talk about the advantages of being an accelerator, because you hear, you know, depending on what kind of news you read or you listen to, there are many people who are saying, well, there's an accelerator bubble, not all of them are good. There are some people saying, no, it's the best experience you could ever have. It sounds to me like you've had a really good experience in your accelerator. Obviously, it brought you to a point where you could win a very global award, and you get a lot of buzz and a lot of attention for it. Can you tell people out there kind of what it is they should be looking for if they do want to partner up at an accelerator, or if they want to just spend time there? When is it worth your time, and when is it not worth your time to be a part of something like that?
That's a very good question. So, the accelerator question is very much in debate. I think there was a time when the first accelerators were coming out. It was very unique. And some of the startups that got to go through that first wave really had an advantage because they were jumping into something new with a bunch of investors that were really excited to receive them. And now it's become very, very big. What I would say the best thing for us from the Founder Fuel Accelerator, the best takeaway was it's kind of like graduating from university, where you have some degree that says some name of a school on it that you can't be that bad if you got through, right? And really that's it. It's like putting sort of a benchmark or a foundation for you saying, well, if you got through there and they let you pitch on demo day, then it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
For us, I think we were actually the first hardware company or company that had hardware as part of their solution in Canada to go through an accelerator. And for us, that was very validating because a lot of people and investors in general just really do not like hardware companies or are very averse to that. So it gave a little bit of a validation for it there.
Yeah.
But if you are applying for an accelerator, what I would definitely say is make sure you have a pretty good idea of where you want to go. And at the end of, let's say it's 3 months, that you can see a clear path towards having a defined product, defined monetization strategy, and something that you can test. Because if you're too early, you just kind of get accelerated towards nothing.
Yeah, so. It's like going to the carnival, but you never win a big stuffed bear or anything. You just like you had fun and you got a bunch of tickets. But do you worry about that if you're an accelerator? Do you worry about like you go in there and you think you have your ideas, but you're being so open to the process that who knows? But someone might change your idea and you might find yourself going in a different way. Did you ever have to struggle with kind of having to let go of certain ideas that you thought were central or core to the business? And then what do you do? How do you solve for that? How do you deal with those feelings, I guess, as a business owner?
I think we must have pivoted 8 times in Founder Fuel over the course of 3 months.
Wow. You started out as a fast food restaurant and you ended up getting into this RFID space, which is amazing. Most people don't get that far.
No, it's amazing how the mentors will really give you great feedback on that. But essentially what I joke about is we tested every single hypothesis of what we didn't want to do. So let's say coming out of the accelerator, we were a bit early at that time, especially for Internet of Things. What was great about it was it allowed us to very quickly validate all the things we did not want to do. So we tried a bunch of different strategies. Do we look more like if this then that, but for things, or are we a platform for people meeting each other, or are we this and that? And we got those out of the way really, really quickly. If you're going into an accelerator, well, you should already be an entrepreneur. So you should kind of expect that you get your ideas destroyed regularly. And it just lets you pick yourself back up stronger each time. So doing an accelerator is just, you know, taking your daily life, but then multiplying it times, let's say 10, and having 3 months of hell and pleasure at the same time.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. So what's next for you guys? Are you working anymore with Microsoft? Are you going to be doing anything else with them? Are there other accelerator opportunities in your future, or are you just now cast off into the world now like wild salmon hoping to spawn up the river and get your business done? I don't know if that's a really good metaphor, but I had salmon recently, so that's why I'm thinking about it.
Well, the metaphor I use for accelerators is they kind of look at the biggest and the nicest, sharpest rocks they can find. They put them in their slingshot and they shoot them and they hear if anyone goes ow, right?
Yeah.
And if someone goes ow, they go like, okay, it's a good thing we accelerated them. They're clearly doing something disruptive. I think that's a little bit stronger than salmon. No, for us at this point right now, we're just really excited that we have a very clear targeted vertical. And right now for us, that's retail. Apple did something cool in September, and that's that they released iBeacons and everything with iOS 7.
Yeah, I saw that.
And what that did for us was it just everything we were saying before all of a sudden was now validated because Apple said that's what they were doing. So even if we were pitching essentially something similar to iBeacons a year earlier, you have to wait for one of the big giants to validate the space, then everyone looks at you.
Sure.
So So our focus now is very much on retail because we can do a lot more than just iBeacons in retail. So we're getting together some strategic partners, moving forward on that. And we still have a whole bunch of other people, because of course we're a platform, that are using our platform for things like parking or for, you know, discovering coworkers in the co-working space or for the office, all kinds of different stuff, even for timing
That's
rally
pretty cool.
cars.
Yeah.
So we're keeping those people happy while we're really focusing our product offering so that people can understand at least one vertical really well what we do, and then we branch out from there.
Got it. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. If people want to get in touch with Really Active or they want to figure out what you're doing, what are the best ways for them to get in touch with you?
We put ourselves on all the social media, so you can find us there. And Really Active is with two E's, so it's a different spelling. So we did very well on all the domain names and all the online things, so it should be pretty easy to find. And in the worst case, you can always try and contact me. If you Google, you'll find my email address easier than you think, and you can fill in my inbox. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks, Jeff Dungan. I hope the best for you, and we'll be watching you from afar in Montreal. And for anyone else who wants information about how to work with Microsoft, there are several opportunities for you guys. You can work with the Microsoft BizSpark program, which is how Really Active got started working with Microsoft and how they got onto Azure. You can also look into the Microsoft Ventures program. There's going to be some stuff opening up in Canada. I don't have a lot of information or details about it, but it's going to become a much wider presence across Canada, especially in the Toronto and the Montreal and the eastern edge of Canada region. And you can always look us up at BizSpark on Twitter, and you can send us emails, bizspark@microsoft.com. And you can look for me at Douglas Kretz on Facebook or also on Twitter, and I'm happy to answer any of your questions. So once again, it's great to talk to you, Jeff, and we will talk to you guys next week. We're going to talk to Joni Cobb, who runs Pipeline in Kansas City, I believe. And that will actually be our fifth anniversary party. We're going to have some people in the studio, some BizSpark members. We'll be handing out pizza and beverages, and we'll be interviewing a couple of those BizSpark startups to figure out what it is they've been doing since they started the program. So you want to make sure you see that. That's, again, Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, and we will see you then. Thanks a lot, everybody.